Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a very special edition of the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. It is Friday, December 18th, 2009, and this week we're wrapping up Le Web Conference held December 9th and 10th in Paris, France. While it might have been a bit dreary and wet in Paris, it's Paris, so who can complain, right? You might be asking yourself, what's the big deal around Le Web? And I want to address that right away. It's actually a huge deal when you consider the Internet is something almost all of us have in common. And it's important, I think, to reach as many key influencers outside the U.S. as in it. Since every week we talk to influencers, I thought that we would take the show outside the U.S., and actually Le Web is the largest conference of its kind. More than 2,000 people from across the globe came in to attend. I won't get into how much cable and other kinds of equipment were required to make sure that we all had Wi-Fi and food and everything else at the conference, but there was even a queen there, Queen Reina of Jordan, with her One Goal initiative, but we'll get to that in a bit. I was very lucky to be joined by Miley Cannon, a fellow Columbia Graduate School of Journalism alum who is finishing up a joint program with Columbia and attended the conference as a student. And she had an interesting perspective on a number of items, you know, and events that happened at the conference. So it was really good to have someone there to be able to pass ideas with and share with. She may or may not be joining us on the program, and I want to give a big shout out to her for helping make sure that I knew where to be and, you know, syncing up. But before we get to that, I have to reveal my computer crashed when I walked into the main plenary area of the conference hall and went to start it up. But I still managed to get a fair number of interviews and some key gets that I really felt I needed to bring to this show. And the reason that I was able to do that is because of a wonderful new app that you must check out from Blog Talk Radio sister and broadcasting Cinch, otherwise known as CinchCast. Or you can check it out at cinchcast.com. My thanks to Alan, Amy, and the whole Blog Talk Radio team, because I was able to bring an iPhone with me with the app installed already, and it ran off the conference's Wi-Fi, so there were no data charges. Because I was just carrying a phone, a lot of interviewees seemed much more calm and relaxed, and I hope you'll see that when I play them for you in a few minutes. So who was I able to talk to? Well, there was quite a number of interesting people to choose from with, I think, there was probably as many speakers in a way as there were attendees. So it was one of those kinds of situations where, you know, everyone from Jack Dorsey to, you know, who's very known here as one of the founders of and the person who had the original idea for Twitter and who, you know, showed the new swipe card technology off in a demo that didn't go perfectly, but it did end up showing us how Twitter will be able to take credit card payments in the near term by using a headphone input on mobile devices. So pretty amazing stuff. So people like him. And then we had people like Freddie Minnie, who is someone who is at NetVibes. And NetVibes is got a new product that it has launched. And I'll let him talk about that in a second so you can get a feel for it. But the other part about Freddie that was really interesting is he talked about doing business in Europe versus doing business in the States. And the question that was asked by a particular journalist, if you can call him that, a British author and writer, was, you know, consistently, why not just get on a plane and go to the U.S.? And I think that it kind of took some of the Europeans on the panel that specifically addressed that kind of by surprise because they felt like there were a lot of comparative advantages, but certainly they didn't really get to the point where it wasn't comparing or basically giving reasons why not to go to the U.S. or how it's easier to do business in Europe. There's a lot of restrictions and regulation, as we understand it, between the countries in Europe, and it can make it difficult to do business. But there were a couple of people that we got that were able to really be advocates. Freddie is someone, again, from NetVibes, who actually works most of the time out of San Francisco but is French, so spends his time or splits his time between France and the United States. So I'm going to play the clip for you now. You'll be able to hear Cinch at the beginning because I did capture it with the technology, so you can enjoy this for a few minutes.
Cinch.
So I'm here at Le Web speaking with Freddie Mini.
Hello.
With NetVibes. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Very good. Now, you are showing and demonstrating a new product, NetVibes Wasabi. And a lot of us know NetVibes for a long time, but what is the Wasabi product, or what does it do for NetVibes?
Well, it does two things. The first one is it has a new backend, what we name near real time. And we have integrated two technologies that you can find publicly, PubSub from Google and RSS Cloud. The private beta testers, we did open for beta a month ago, and we have 30,000 people private beta testing as we speak.
And that's all over the world, yes?
And that's all over the world, absolutely. We have about a third of our users in the U.S., so that would mean from a beta testing, statistically about 10,000. So, near real-time, two public technologies, RSS Cloud from Devriner and PubSub from Google. And for the publishers, we don't use neither of those two. We have developed our own technology named Instant Update. So we do accelerate the distribution of content through RSS already. And the second thing is NetVibes does dashboards. And a dashboard needs to be time-sensitive, and it needs to be very comfortable to read. You know, if it's unreadable, then a dashboard is pointless.
Absolutely.
So, like in your car. So, so the point is, the dashboard needs to be comfortable, so it needs to be comfortable in the widget view, and we missed a reader view. So we did add, in Wasabi, a reader view named Smart Reader. So on Wasabi, you have two buttons. On the top bar, widget, view, and smart and reader view. And when you click on the reader view, your account, without no manipulation whatsoever, will give you all your information from your widget in an anti-chronological way, like an AFP or Reuters view of the world, basically.
And that allows you to, it has some sharing capabilities too.
Yes, absolutely. Like we did, open in a year ago. Every article, every widget can be shared through Facebook and through Twitter as well. Yes.
Very exciting. So now you told me that there's an announcement you're going to be making on the main stage tomorrow. So will you give us a preview?
Absolutely. We are going. We are going to open the beta publicly. So it means that for the 25,000 people who are on the waiting list, and we keep on tweeting that they are still waiting for their code to upgrade their Wasabi. The good news is the wait is over because we are going to open tomorrow at 12:30 French time on stage. So we are moving from private beta to public beta.
Very cool. So people basically get a refreshed look and feel of your widgets, and then there's also this
smart reader.
Yes, smart reader technology.
Absolutely.
And what I think is interesting, too, is the business aspect as well. So there's business dashboards that you're selling to agencies and others. Tell me a little bit about that. You just showed me one from L'Oreal.
Sure. In fact, what I showed you is an example because I don't want to show you the real one. So the one I showed you is a fake one, so L'Oreal India Don Quixote is fake. But the good point is your audience can test drive it. It's on L'Oreal, like the cosmetic firm, one word, dot, netvicebusiness, one word, .com. And so what it does, you know, NetVice is a dashboard platform. We say personal dashboard publishing. So NetVice does dashboard. So NetVice.com is your own dashboard. And for corporations, for brands, for VIPs, you can have a dashboard that focuses on your brand, your company, your competitors, your anything, every vertical subject. So we do sell that in a professional version of NetVice.
So what people would be seeing is obviously competitive information about, you know, news stories and other ways that in search they're coming up in real time.
Yes.
And that seems to be the big, you know, obviously it goes very well with the theme here,
yes,
but it's a really big development.
It's a huge development and it's a huge evolution as well, because, you know, we say that we are the third stage of the access to information on the internet. We move from browsing to searching, and what we believe is right now the area of monitoring. You can't search for your reputation. You can't search for what matters on one specific subject. You search on one point. The thing is, if you want to have a dashboard of everything that matters to you on one very specific subject, you need a dashboard. I mean, you need a platform to monitor everything that matters to you. And NetVice is the only one to do that today, the only one to be 100% personalizable. You can remove the search engine on NetVice if you don't want to. The only one to have an unlimited number of dashboard per account if you want to. And we are the only one to have a professional version with what we name the push publishing, meaning that the owner and the publisher of the dashboard can continue to update the dashboard without breaking the personalized version of the dashboard. And it works like an operating system. That's in the professional version of NetVice, the one that we name Premium Dashboard. We sell this one.
Yes. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, because it seems like this is very much a listening service, is it in the realm of competing with companies like Radian6?
Oh, that's a very good question. Radian6 is, in fact, a very good, that's a very, very good product. And we love to talk. The thing is, we have not invented dashboards. There are a lot of dashboards. I mean, IBM does dashboard, Google does dashboard, and I mean, everybody is doing a dashboard, but they are doing a dashboard of the stuff they do. So the thing is, they fix a part of the problem, but not the whole problem. So to your question, NetVice is the dashboard of dashboard, the Uber dashboard, the thing that, you know, will integrate everything. And that's the reason why our widget technology has been open source a year and a half ago, so that, you know, everybody can invest time on our widget, and they, you know, the technology doesn't belong to us no more. So the thing is, you need to have an aggregation of all the dashboard in one place if you want to fix the problem of monitoring. So to the same extent, we work with e-reputation product and data mining product and all of those, because those are partners that create an expertise, and that expertise can be aggregated in our dashboard. In fact, we did announce a strategic partnership with a company named Sage a month ago. Sage creates ERP and CRM product. They have a dashboard, but they have a dashboard for the Sage product they produce, you know, like Radian6 and Google and all the others. So what Sage wanted to, and the reason why we work together, and you know, we are going to work together more, is they are widgetizing their offer so that, you know, the peak of the iceberg of Sage, the things that people do, can be integrated in an advice dashboard so that they have one single dashboard to include the Sage thing and the Radian6 part and the RSX part and, you know, the Google part and the YouTube part, the Figure part, the Twitter part, etc., etc.
And so now our heads are exploding.
Absolutely.
Freddie Mini from NetVibes, I appreciate your time.
Thank
you. We'll sign off for now.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So as you can see, the technology was a big theme at the conference. I referred to the theme of the conference, which was actually the real-time web. And so that was something that was discussed at length. And so part of what you heard there was obviously the announcement, pre-announcement, that NetVibes was going into a public beta for its new Wasabi product, and also that NetVibesBusiness.com was creating dashboards. And there was a lot of talk about dashboards there, and I'll just repeat the URL that Freddie mentioned there, which is L'Oreal.NetVibes.com, where you can see sort of a dummied-up version of what we looked at there live, which is a very exciting way of seeing every competitor in real time, basically the hits that they're getting on the web, so you can see all of the headlines and then decide if you want to delve deeper. Next, we had I ran into someone who I'm now considering a friend, Betsy Weber of TechSmith, who had a pre-announcement for us as well. And this is a much shorter clip, so let me just play this for you.
Finch.
So I'm standing here with Betsy Weber at LeWeb, who just pulled me over, and we've had an interesting dialogue over the last few years at conferences about a product that I love called Snagit from TechSmith. And I have screamed on many videos about how I want it for Mac, and Betsy was keen to tell me some good news, so I thought I would share it with all of you. So, Betsy?
It's true, there was a lot of screaming, but I finally have good news for you. Snagit for the Mac is coming. So, your wishes will be granted very soon.
And very soon is where we have to leave it, because we don't know when it's going to be released yet, but soon is, I'm assured by Betsy's smile that it's really coming. So, anything different in the Mac version than in the PC version?
Sure. Well, it was built from the ground up. I mean, Snagit was launched for Windows in 1991, so we took all that knowledge that we had learned from screen capture and took it over to the Mac, but it was built from the feedback for Mac users by Mac users, so...
So good to hear and good to see you all the way from Michigan. Anything else from TechSmith that you want to tell me about? Since you guys, this may be the only time I get to see you.
That's true. Well, yesterday, Jing, our other product that's all about quick and simple screen capture and video screen capture on the Mac and PC, yesterday we had an update that includes direct from Jing to Twitter, so you can easily share.
Very cool.
Quickly.
That's great. Thank you so much, Betsy. This is why I love always talking to Betsy, because this is TechSmith is a company that listens. Proof positive, yeah?
Yes, exactly. Because of your yelling and screaming and your feedback, based on your feedback.
So we love TechSmith and we love Betsy for pulling us over. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, again, Betsy Weber of TechSmith, and the screaming she's referring to is me at conferences. If you couldn't hear quite, because there was a lot of background noise on that particular clip, they actually capture, or she is usually the one, that their community person at conferences, usually her, has video where you can talk to the developers at TechSmith. And so for the last probably 2 years, I've been going, why isn't there Snagit for a Mac? As a Mac user. So in any event, Betsy, you know, to her credit, sent all of my feedback along and the feedback of many, many others. And the end result is that the Mac Snagit product is actually out in beta as of today. So it is out there and available. Next, I want to play for you an interesting clip. There was a young man, backstory. So we all, when we started at the conference, you always get a conference packet, of course. And inside, everybody got a little packet, and it looked like something that might be a condom wrapper, actually. And so many of us were wondering, what the heck is this product? So we opened it up, and it's, lo and behold, it's something with a, it's a little round, almost like a key fob, with a number on it, a random set of letters and numbers that has an adhesive that you could take off on the back. And so, of course, I had to track down the person who created this technology to figure out what it was. And the technology is, or the company is actually called Wooper. And I spoke with their CEO and founder, the very young Julian Sornay, and I'll let him explain his product to you.
So we're talking with a developer of a new technology, a new way of sort of capturing chat as well as instant messaging anonymously. His name is Julian Sornay with Wooper. And Julian, I wanted to get your one-second pitch on what your product is and what it aims to do.
Okay. Basically, we have created a new, brand new way to communicate in real life. We have created a tag to send message to people in real life. You poke someone with a tag, sticky tag, and you enter the code and to send your message, and people who receive your tag, called the RIP, can read your message and respond.
Uh-huh.
Easy. You can chat on text messaging in real life, and you can go back online and to share photos, videos, anything.
And so you're saying something interesting to me earlier about the age groups that this appeals to. So right now this is 10,000 users in France, yes?
Yes, exactly. 10,000 users, mostly students, high school students.
And so when you bring it to the U.S., do you expect to have problems? And when are you going to bring it to the U.S.?
Yes, maybe we could have problems, but we just send something to communicate. We don't have the responsibility to the message that people send. We have a privacy system and a safety system to control the message. But anyone can send any message they want. So
you said that one of the biggest groups here in France, though, are kids in like high school and possibly college. And one of the fun things is you can throw the tag that you get.
Finch.
So I'm standing here with Betsy Weber at Le Web, who just pulled me over.
Finch.
So we're talking with a developer of a new technology, a new way of sort of capturing chat as well as...
So I'm repeating myself there. So basically, Julian's created this technology where basically you can put a tag on with a number or a button and assign that to yourself online using your phone or going to their website, wooper.com. It's Wooper, and anonymously SMS text one another using these tag numbers. So, of course, in fact, I think I was talking about this with Betsy. We didn't get it. You know, we're Gen Xers. We were like, we would never use it. But, you know, as Julian talked about, it's a huge, huge market for high school kids in France, and you can imagine how it could be huge here in the U.S. as well, giving that idea that, you know, you can be completely, you know, you never even have to give your name away. It gives you this air of aloofness or distance from who you actually are. So, again, sort of that idea of kind of a chat room, but captured through text, so almost like real-time, you know, real-time chat in a way. So in any event, I thought that was interesting in the sense that, one, it really took us all by surprise when we were trying to figure out what this was in our conference packet. And two, when tracking down the technology and talking with Julian about the problem he was trying to solve as a 28-year-old who's coming out the gate with a new product and seeing success, in that there's a monthly fee involved in using the service for the user, that high school students are more than willing to pay, and that the charges are actually incurred through their mobile carrier. So that might be a trend that we see more as well, that there will be more services that we're starting to get used to as applications come into our lives. I think we'll start to see that become more mainstream. But that was one of the services that we were able to bring to you and highlight. The other thing I wanted to play for you was just sort of reaction to Queen Raina of Jordan. She came the second day, and of course was a huge presence. It was very positive, talking about her passion for helping children through education. And she's actually picked soccer or football, depending on where you live in the world and sit in the marketplace, as a way to try to unify people to help with this campaign. And so actually the website that you would go to get the reaction, and that's the reaction to Queen Raina of Jordan.
And that's the end of Queen Raina about joinonegoal.org, a new initiative that she has started to urge leaders of the world to come together, and those of us in the collective consciousness of the web, to help children who are fighting poverty in countries and mostly the, you know, underdeveloped world come together. So
I mean, that was the long and short of it. You know, she was a huge, huge presence. Miley Cannon, who I mentioned earlier, actually got a photo of her when she snuck out for a cigarette, and not Queen Raina, my colleague Miley stepped out for the cigarette, and she was walking by. Again, that website is joinonegoal.org. And someone who was invited, there were a number of app developers that were invited to meet with Queen Raina to talk about engaging their communities in the One Goal Initiative. And one of them, who I just adore, he has the most glorious personality of anyone I came across at the conference, is actually Ian Dodsworth from TweetDeck. He's the founder, CEO, creator, and we have a little bite with him, and he was just a delight.
Finch.
Okay.
We're doing it here.
Yes, we're doing it right now.
Hi.
Real time.
Hello.
Hi, my name's Ian.
Yes, hey, Ian.
Hey, I've got dimples.
You do, you look cute. So everybody will see in your picture, and that'll make actual sense when this goes out, yes. And you were the founder of TweetDeck,
yes.
And I think it's CEO, yes.
CEO, founder and CEO, yes.
Wow, that makes you very powerful.
Oh, it's good, you know.
Shaking in my boots, actually.
Should be now.
How did TweetDeck get so popular? I just got to cut to the chase.
Yeah, no, you should. So I put it out a year and a half ago, just me, and it was still just me as a developer, you know, perhaps not bedroom developer, but study developer. And I put it out, and I thought it would be a niche product because it was big and obtrusive, and it was black, and it was like, this is what I wanted.
Uh-huh.
So I have a history. I come from development for banks, doing dashboards and terminal applications. So very dry, but very fast-moving data. It's kind of my thing. I don't obviously get out very much. And I love that kind of stuff.
But entertainment and media is associated with black, so I guess that you were going for entertainment
that.
Media field.
And everything else is white. I was just trying to be different. And
yes.
Everything else was tiny and small.
And you
so
were
I thought,
big.
You know what? We're going full screen, black. No one's ever seen something like this before. Awesome. It's my Twitter dashboard.
So at Blogworld 2 years ago, did you know Guy Kawasaki scolded everyone in the audience who raised their hand and said they were using TweetDeck, which was everybody but one person, and said you ought to donate money? Did you get any return from that?
I got an email from Guy because I've been talking to him and didn't get any money.
Oh, not even a dollar?
I think actually Guy was the biggest donator.
Yes, and I see he's been using other apps, so obviously people are diversifying. What are you doing to kind of keep up with the times and change? I mean, obviously LibWeb is put on by the Seismic folks,
yeah.
So kind of competitive there. So what are you doing to keep up with the cool kids?
With the cool kids. Well, it's fun because I've tried very hard to ignore the arms race, the feature war that exists here, and just do what I set out to do. So I set out to build an app. I set out to build a browser, a new type of browser, not to browse web pages, but to browse streams of data, very fast streams of data. So not to do with financial, but to do with social media or anything else. I mean, it could be RSS. They're all streams of data.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what I set out to do. We haven't done it yet. We're getting there. So my vision of a browser is where we're going. And all this other stuff that's going on is kind of, I just see it was going on somewhere else. Because I really believe in developing inside your own little bubble, inside your own little ecosystem, if you like. And in that bubble with you are all your users.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good place. It's a bit of a weird place at times. But it's a great place to be. And if they want something and there's enough of them, then we do it and we build it.
So what's the best feedback you've gotten?
I get the most stunning thing that I absolutely love is people coming up and saying, now I understand Twitter.
But it wasn't Twitter. Necessarily for Twitter. The end goal isn't Twitter. That just it's the tool that happens to capture those conversations really well.
It does, and you know, but Twitter is a big part of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not even beginning to pretend that it's, you know, it's Twitter and Facebook and this and this and this. It's like the core of this is Twitter.
Yes.
For sure. Everything else, value adds. It broadens the appeal, and we see how it goes. You know.
So do you have the you know, everybody's going to... I'm going to ask a slightly financial question.
Okay.
Do you have the money to keep going till you get to your vision, do you think?
Yes. Yeah, we have a very defined vision. We have a very defined roadmap for that vision.
Mm-hmm.
Defined as in we know where the end point is.
Yeah.
And obviously you work back from there with the money that we've raised.
Mm-hmm.
So we've raised a couple of million dollars. We've got a team of 7 or 8 people. Burn rate's very low.
So tell me about this Silicon Valley bubble effect that you were noticing at the conference that we were talking about just a second ago.
I think that's why this is important, is because Silicon Valley, the bubble, they get up, they don't normally seem to go anywhere, because why should they? Fair play, I get that. But they come here. And they don't do that. We don't get this in London. We get 1 or 2 people coming over.
But there's you are known, I mean, as a country. I would say Britain is known for a lot of innovation in terms of UI, TED being there. You think that influenced you at all to help you make this application that was different looking, but obviously people took to very quickly?
No, I didn't know. I didn't have anything to do with it, to be fair. I built the app for me. This is what I wanted to see on screen. It's not in London or... It's got to do with me having a background in financial dashboards and knowing what works and doesn't work and knowing how to scan data incredibly quickly, because that's with the people I've been working with.
So a couple of questions for my own personal love. Do you watch Dragon's Den?
I've seen it occasionally, yeah.
Do you like it? It's like one of my favorite shows. Please say yes.
I find it a bit annoying. I find it a little bit churlish, the way they treat
Why?
These people.
Oh, yeah.
I know they've got to be... Well,
it's not like that in the real world, huh?
Okay, it's rubbish. It's utter rubbish. The program is rubbish.
I love Evan, the host of the show.
Yeah, he's... Okay, so he's real, but everything else is just utter rubbish. It's just made up.
We had trouble with
it. But the idea of it is great.
Yeah. The tight shots they were doing on Evan last series... we're a little annoying.
Oh, he's a lovely man.
He's a lovely man. I love anyone that is...
I can't believe we're talking about Evan.
Yes.
Bald. Nothing wrong with being bald.
Yeah, hey, bald is in.
That's masculinity.
It. Oh, hey.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with you there.
Let's not go there.
Other thing.
Yes.
Where do you have this fabulous photo that's everywhere of you? That I would assume is your Twitter picture also. A picture of you straight on.
Oh, the mirror. Bit mean.
Yeah, a little bit moody. Moody, like
interesting.
That.
Interesting.
Yeah,
yes.
Introspective. So where was that picture
Mysterious.
Taken? Mysterious.
Where was that picture taken?
Yeah.
If I actually told you the truth of where that picture was taken, and my wife is the only one that knows,
you
would kill yourself. So I'm not going to answer that.
Kill myself.
Don't ever tell anyone where you took that picture.
Your wife said this. Did your wife take that picture?
No, I took it.
You took it of yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a good picture.
It is. It's a great picture.
Yeah,
it's just everywhere. I tried to see what you look like from different angles, and there's only like 2 or 3 shots of you.
Moody.
Yes.
Yeah, see, it's
slightly
a bit
moody.
You know,
so you can't tell how old you're going to be. That's the biggest thing.
How old I'm going to be?
Yeah, you can't tell from that picture. That could be a guy in his 40s. That could be a guy in his 20s. You just have no clue.
Yes, an enigma.
An enigma.
Oh,
lots of Bond-esque words.
End it on that.
All right. It's been great chatting with you, Ian.
Thank you very much.
So obviously I had a lot of fun chatting with Ian. I should say that his partner in crime, the community manager for TweetDeck, was standing right there, Richard Barley. We had a much longer chat actually leading up to the interview. Dragon's Den, if you don't know, is like Shark Tank in the U.S. or the U.S. version is called Shark Tank. But the idea is though there was a lot of talk at the conference about raising money at the actual conference, and there was discussion about how much money had been raised the previous year and if they would, you know, if people would report back, you know, how much money would be raised this year at the conference. So, of course, people were busy pitching actually for money in some of the booths down below. So the show Dragons Den is actually, the concept is that you're pitching to these dragons who, in the UK version of the series, if you've seen it on BBC America or the actual BBC version, clean version, you've seen, you know, that there are, you know, a number of very wealthy investors that basically you come in and pitch for a percentage of your business. So thought that that was kind of, you know, interesting to compare to. Thought it was also interesting, Ian was from the finance industry, and so part of the brilliance of TweetDeck is that it was early and quick to synthesize Twitter data. So you could, you know, in terms of being a dashboard, it was really amazing when it first came out, and it still is. The other piece of it is that Ian sees it as being a dashboard. So the end of TweetDeck, or the end of the development, doesn't begin and end with Twitter, although he, as you heard, he definitely credits Twitter with being a huge piece of the growth. But Ian was the first, actually, and this was the second day of the two-day conference, Ian was the first to actually point out to me the Silicon Valley bubble. And there was certainly that feeling for me because I know most of the people or know of most of the people, know Chris Huer and Christy Wells from Social Media Club, know of Michael Arrington, who was on stage actually doing interviews, and Robert Scoble, who I'm told is a fan of the Cinch technology, and unfortunately we did not get to speak. Very nice man. You know, who was uploading tons of video and very busy on the first day, and some of the bubble effect kind of faded out the second day, though Violet Blue was certainly there front and center. The sex columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle talking about the future of sex in what you would think of as a more provocative discussion, but she made it very, very academic, and all credit to her, it was incredibly engaging and interesting, talking about androids and other life-size characters being developed mostly in Europe and in Asia. So, but obviously can be purchased any place. And now with her appearance on Oprah, she's hit the big time. So it was interesting to hear Ian be the person to first point that out, because, of course, I had been talking with Miley, who also went to Columbia School of Journalism, and she had asked me on the first day a really what I thought it was important question, which was, where are the journalists? Because there was that sort of bleeding of lines between something like TechSmith being possibly the place of record for news coming out of the conference, but at the same time, Michael Arrington, being the head of it, was actually part of the show. He was interviewing people. So that crossing of lines was certainly something to watch. And, you know, I'm not sure. At one point, I wasn't quite sure if I liked that or thought that that was a helpful thing or a good thing, because I really wanted to make sure that I, you know, heard from European leaders and could identify them. So, and in fact, I knew before that I went, I wanted to try to get Tariq from Jolie Cloud and be able to interview him. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get him, but he was more prominent the second day with an announcement about a completely new operating system that he's worked on called Jolie Cloud, and it's JOLICLOUD, if you want to look it up. Very interesting take on operating systems. He, of course, was one of the founders of NetVibes to begin with. So probably the most famous Frenchman in France, at least. The person who runs the show, and my reference to Seismic, is Loïc Lemire, who we've interviewed on this program before. And Loïc, obviously running Seismic, there were tons of Seismic signs all over the place. And as a Twitter client that originally aim to engage with video as well. It was interesting to hear Ian talk about, you know, the arms race, if you will, of Twitter applications. Really great way of phrasing things, as I would expect nothing less of Ian. And he's one of those people where, again, you don't know what to expect from the pictures, but walked away wanting to use TweetDeck every single day because his personality was so engaging. Really, really nice man. So I always love using products of people that seem genuine and really, really nice. And he's just a genuinely nice guy. So all credit to him. So, you know, the next couple of people that I ran into actually played really well with what Ian had pointed out about the Silicon Valley bubble. Brian Solis, Putting the Public Back in Public Relations, is his newest book that came out earlier in the year. We had him on, I believe, in October to talk about the book's release. He's with FutureWorks PR. I'm sure you know of his name if you don't know him specifically. And then he's, you know, as the bubble seems to be, or the Americans seem to be, everyone kind of knows one another. So Richard Binhammer, who is very much part of Dell's success story when it comes to social media, happened to be chatting. And they were very, very, they have a nice way of engaging with one another. And so I asked if I could just interview them as they were standing there. Again, Richard at Dell on Twitter, so you may know him that way a little bit better. But I'll play you a clip from their interaction, which I think is really funny.
So guys, I'm standing with Brian Solis and Richard Binhammer from Brian Solis, the eponymous Brian Solis of what FutureWorks PR, I guess, is officially your title, and then Richard Binhammer from Dell.
Right.
Hello, gentlemen.
How are you?
Hello.
Good.
You enjoying Paris?
I am, thank you.
Good.
You're doing
good.
The reverse questioning. You
yeah,
see this?
Very nice.
The Canuck, you know, he gets in there. We're
mademoiselle.
So we're oui. Sort of the, well, you're not American, technically,
right.
Richard, but kind of the American tech contingent here.
Okay.
So what is it like being at LeWeb?
I just got here.
That's such a lie.
There's some interesting discussions going on.
That's a good answer, Richard.
That's
lots
very
of,
generic.
Lots of...
what are you looking for?
A lot of great people.
Yeah, there are great people.
So,
There's some really interesting stuff about some of the startups. There's some, interesting things for developers.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter opening its API, which everybody says they'll believe it when they see it. I believe it already.
Good answer.
I think it's a great place to be to learn. Actually, it's interesting. You come here to see everyone you know back from the States here sharing information you couldn't get out of them back home.
So, and why is that?
Because it's not Paris back home. It's not as glamorous to release some big news as it is here. But I have to tell you, though, that news that was coming out of this conference yesterday was nonstop. Unbelievable. I will say this about Twitter. Let's focus on a user manual for our parents and siblings on how to use Twitter before we try to make any more applications on it. Otherwise, they're not going to grow as fast as they'd like to.
So you're talking about the card swiping technology?
I'm talking about just Twitter in general.
Yeah. That's
yeah,
a good point.
Brian raises a really good point because someone asked me about, what was the next big thing. And I said, the fact of the matter is really the next big thing is the next 500,000 or the next 1 million people or the next 2 million people or the next 3 million people that come onto the web and start using these tools. And in a very kind of cluttered marketplace where they crystallize and add the bulk is really going to be the next big thing, because it's the new people start to use the tools.
Mm-hmm.
And
humanize.
Like you say, your mother and your brothers and your sisters and my mother and my brothers and sisters, when they start to use some things, that's the next big thing.
Same here. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, and that reminds me of back home, Lunch for Good. And I think you were involved in that, yeah?
Not really.
I mean...
I admired it from afar.
So Lunch for Good is about, the democratization of the Internet, and we met up for some interesting group discussion. But one of the things that we talked about was how you encourage critical thinking. And
somebody at my table brought up the fact that nobody's really taught how to think critically. But I think when you're in situations like this where you have so much information coming at you, you realize that you're synthesizing and making decisions really quickly.
That's really interesting. You know, I'd have a philosophical discussion if I were there that would probably make it a lunch and then a dinner and then an after party. Because I think the biggest problem...
Patio keynote. Probably.
Yeah, patio, exactly. Because here's the next topic for the patio keynote is...
Which I'm not invited to, by the way.
No. Anyone can come. Anyone can come as long as you drink and smoke. The truth is that you can't have any form or aspect of critical thinking if you're any way, shape, or form using Twitter or social media as it is today, because you're too much of a narcissist to realize that you have to think deeper and analyze things beyond yourself. And it's a very harsh statement, but it's true. We have to take the me out of social media.
You know, that brings up an interesting point, because I was having mixed feelings, I'll be honest, about Mike Arrington and Bob Scoble, Robert Scoble, I think are, you know, admire
wow.
Robert Scoble, you know, who are great guys in their own right and have, you know, done, you know, things that are laudable for sure. But, you know, that sort of official blogger line blurring between being involved in the actual conference. Did you guys have any thoughts about that, or did that just seem normal to you?
Yeah, silence.
Do they know them?
No, there's nothing there that, you know, I think that kind of thing goes on at any conference.
They're hardworking guys,
and,
you know.
Yeah, and I mean, whether it's an internet conference or other kinds of conferences, I mean, those kinds of blurring lines always happen, you know. People from media often do, you know, chair other conferences or give keynotes or do, you know, Wall Street Journal, you know, reporter interviews, you know, someone that they report on regularly as part of a regular panel. So I don't find that...
Lines blur.
Yeah, I don't find that surprising.
So...
you know, one of the things I was interested in yesterday, which you guys might also find really interesting, was the Pearl Rock thing. What Pearl trees.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, in terms of a different way of curating the web along with your different interests and stuff, I don't know whether that'll take off at all, but I do find that that's...
Did you try it out?
No, I haven't tried it out yet, but...
Yep.
But that was an interesting one, too, because, you know, the web is so massive.
Well, it's on the web homepage on the right.
On this whole way of how you curate the web and then share your interests more, so that it's not just connecting on Twitter, but in fact sharing the depth of what
and even capturing that archive data.
Yeah.
Is
so I thought that was kind of interesting, and you know, and is a little bit different than your everyday new app.
All right. So final question. I know you guys have someplace else to be, and you alluded to this earlier. Where'd you get your Twitter photo?
My Twitter photo is actually from David Alston from the All Hat Party at South by Southwest.
Oh, that was a good time. Yeah, that's a good time.
Brian?
But this photo
my
is
Twitter
actually
photo,
from Brian.
Actually,
yes.
I don't know what my Twitter photo is right now. It's in a tie. Oh, that was taken by Leora Israel in New York.
Very cool. The man of much illustration. Anyway, thank you guys for your time.
Good
really
to
appreciate
talk to you.
It.
Thank
All
you.
Right.
You're very welcome.
I feel warmed up now.
So that was, of course, Brian Solis and Richard Benhammer of Dell. You know, great guys. You heard me there pose the question that I said, you know, kind of I thought about throughout the conference. It was interesting because at one point Mike Arrington came into a lounge room that I was sitting in and you know, I said, hey, Mike, you know, because I wanted to interview him for the show. And the first day, typical Mike Arrington from everything that you hear, I can confirm it is true. One day, super happy, super nice, you know, hey, catch me tomorrow. I'm free all day tomorrow. You know, try to talk to him the next day and it's, oh, hi. You know, when I was very, very nice to him. So decided I would not approach him the second day and probably never again for the program. I'm not sure what we'd learn in any event. One of the other things was I solicited community questions before I entered the conference to try to get feedback on the things that people here in the U.S. wanted to know. And somebody on my Columbia Journalism listserv had a really good question that she posed.
I think at the conference there was something like 4 out of over 200 speakers that were women. And the one thing that I remember from the first day very strongly was that Marissa Mayer from Google was one of the women, and she is featured in Glamour magazine, but Mike Arrington started the interview by saying, let me butter you up and note that you were, you know, one of the 50, you know, beautiful women in tech, something to that effect. You know, she thanked him for that. But I thought it was a little bit diminishing on the first day, and I don't know how much men really realize that because, you know, tech is very much a male-driven field, and it can be a little hard for women to reach the top. However, I have to say, myself and, you know, my fellow women in tech, you know, are strong. We've been around a long time, and I think largely because we can be paid less. Yes, it still happens. You know, there is this sense that, you know, it's kind of math and science, and so it's more male, but I think there's a pretty good split between, it's more like 70-30. It's not 50-50, certainly, but if it were 70-30, there would be more than 4 women speaking at the conference, and unfortunately, I didn't get to talk to Luek or Geraldine, his wife, who organizes the conference, to ask them about that. So we'll leave that as an open question for them, and next time I run into Luek, I will definitely ask that question of him, because that was the one community question I didn't get to and didn't get a good answer for, though I'm not sure that there really is a good answer. Of the 4 women, it's notable that one of them is a queen. I don't know if you consider that more on the women front or not, but that is the way the cookie crumbled in any event at the conference that particular, this particular year. But I'm hoping to be attending many more years to be able to share more information. My next interview is with Martin Varsovsky, who's from Phone. And he's a very, very high-level executive, very high-profile, and he actually gave us a preview of some new technology that Phone has released and gave us a little bit of a preview at the conference to what the announcement he would make later would be.
Finch.
So this is Jennifer Lindsay. I'm here speaking at Le Web with Martin I know I was going to say it wrong. Varsovsky of Phone. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, how are you finding Le Web?
Well, I've been here since the first Le Web, since it started. And it actually, it's amazing because the first one was like in a little theater with maybe 40 people. And now we have this enormous place, probably one of the largest internet gatherings in the world with over 2,000 people. And actually 2,000 relevant people, so I'm having a great time.
And I hear that you have special news, so tell us about what brought you here.
Well, actually, we took advantage of being at Le Web to announce that we're launching a device called the Peak Phone in Europe. And the Peak Phone is a device that gives you email. It's maybe we'll have a picture later when you do this post. It's a BlackBerry-type device that gives you email, but the key thing for your American audience is that if you get a big phone and you come to Europe, you don't pay any roaming charges. So Americans obviously come to Europe and get killed with roaming charges. So do we when we go to America. And this is a roaming-less device. So you pay €12.90 per month, and you only pay €23 for the gadget, and you roam for free anywhere in Europe.
So we should say that the device is pretty thin. Is this a prototype or the actual device?
This is the actual device. In America, it's also sold in America. In America, it's called the Peak, and it's available at getpeak.com. In America, it costs $20 for the device and $15 a month. That's the service only for USA. So Phone has made an alliance with Peak, the American company, and we launched the Peak Phone in Europe.
So, for the American part, you mentioned a website. It's P-E-E-K.
Yeah, or Google Peek, or the website is getpeek.com.
And here in Europe, how can people...
In Europe, people will get it at fon.com, F-O-N.com.
Very cool. And since we visually can't show it to you, it looks a lot like a BlackBerry, except it's thinner and lighter, has a full keyboard, looks very easy to use. Can you consume media on it?
No, this is basically an email machine.
Ah.
Later, it will have browsing capabilities, but it's something, you know, when Americans come to Europe, they spend an average of $10 a day on roaming charges, sometimes way more. With this device, you spend the equivalent of $18 a month. So if you're in Europe for more than 2 days, it's worth to get one, you know. And it's basically complementary to Phone's offering. So Phone is the largest Wi-Fi network in the world.
Yes.
We have 800,000 hotspots. And an American can go to phone.com and get a Phone router. And you put it in your house in Minnesota or in Florida or wherever you are. And then you can come to Europe and roam for free. You never have to pay in Europe if you have a Phone router in America. But even though we have 800,000 hotspots, let's be honest, we still don't have enough coverage many times. Many times you don't find Phone coverage. So the peak Phone gets you your email when you can't find Wi-Fi, because a peak Phone is a GSM device.
So is it meant to be disposable, does it have the regular life cycle of an iPhone, let's say?
Well, it's like an iPhone, but when you buy it, you pay 6 months of service. So you buy it, the Europeans will buy it, €99, that includes 6 months of service. And after that, you can pay €12.90 a month or not pay. If you are an American who comes to Europe twice a year, then you don't pay anymore. There's no contract. There's no, you don't have to pay. And then you only pay when you come that month. And then you stop paying until you come again.
So this is really interesting, because I wonder how it fits in with the overall phone strategy. It sounds like it's a really key piece.
Well, we're opportunistic about this, I should confess. Our phone strategy was being the largest Wi-Fi network in the world, and we were not involved with cellular or mobile. But I ran across Amol Sarva, the entrepreneur who did the peak, and I realized that this device that he was only selling in America had tremendous potential in Europe, because in Europe, we pay roaming charges as if you paid roaming when you went from Florida to New York, or from Texas to California. We pay roaming even though there's no borders. In Europe, you don't need to show your passport when you go from Spain to France, but you need to pay roaming when you go from Spain to France. So I saw a tremendous opportunity to create the United States of Europe through this device, and that's what we're doing, launching it today, available in December 15th.
So is that available at the same date in the U.S. for the peak service?
No, it's actually available anywhere in Europe December 15th, and it will be available in the States at phone.com probably sometime in the winter. We have to give the exact date.
So now you're also speaking on a panel here, or you did speak on a panel. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we spoke about actually the advantages and disadvantages of being entrepreneurs in Europe versus USA. I have been an entrepreneur in the States too. I studied at NYU and Columbia University, and I lived in the States for many years. And so I was, I guess, qualified to speak about the advantages and disadvantages of both. The disadvantages, Americans are very good at promoting the advantages of being an entrepreneur in America, so I'm just going to focus on the disadvantages. There's two major disadvantages of doing business in America, which are the cost of healthcare and the cost of the legal costs. Those are incredibly, disproportionately higher compared to Europe. Like, in America, you pay like $1,000. If you want to treat your employees nicely and you want to give them health care, which I always did, you have to pay sometimes up to $1,000 a month per employee on health care. So Americans complain that in Europe we have a lot of very high social charges. But if you count health care as a social charge, then they are very close to social charges in Europe and in America. And then there's another element of doing business in America that I have found extremely disconcerting, which is the legal costs. Not only are lawyers extremely expensive in America compared to Europe, but there's an uncertainty of getting sued out of nowhere in America. This right to sue that is very American, but it's actually very difficult for business. in Europe, you really have to have a very valid reason to sue. And in Europe, even if you have a valid reason, we don't have the concept that let's say the arm of a baseball player is worth more than the arm of a bus driver. So liability is limited to damage and not who you damaged, which makes it easier for businesses.
Very interesting perspective there. Any other thoughts on the panel that you echoed?
Well, of course, America is much better than Europe in this sense. It has a unified marketplace, a real unified marketplace. In Europe, we have a common market, but then we have language barriers, we have cultural barriers. And then America, not all of America, but Silicon Valley, which has a wonderful immigration policy, and it has 53% of the founders of technology companies in Silicon Valley are actually not American-born. So America has an ability, a culture of welcoming people that is so positive and has created and has made Silicon Valley really the number one place in the world to do technology.
Well, those are fascinating insights. I've got to ask you one question that I've been asking people today. Where did your Twitter picture come from?
You caught me on that one. I don't remember.
Is it the one that's on your name badge?
I think my Twitter... Oh, yeah, this is my Twitter picture. What I can say about Twitter pictures is that as opposed to Google, that you change it all the time and it changes everywhere, the Twitter picture may be like this one from 2006 and it just never changes.
Well, you look great in your picture and it's been great talking with you, Martin.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for interviewing me. Well, now I see how things work.
Again, that was Martin Varsovsky from Phone. And again, we got the pre-announcement there that they were making mobile devices, that are inexpensive, available in Europe and the U.S. And again, those websites are GetPeek, P-E-E-K, and phone.com. I thought it was really interesting, too. One of the most interesting panels to me was the one that he talked about, and I referenced it earlier in terms of doing business in Europe versus the U.S. I thought that it was he had a lot of very valuable things to add. He's someone that now has, is working, I think, primarily from Spain, he said, and has had many successful companies grow to the billion-dollar mark. I think he's had 3 or 4 companies grow very, very large in the multiple million-dollar category, and at least one other besides Phone in the billion-dollar category. So, you know, he is definitely someone who knows success and chooses not to live in the U.S., chooses to do business from Europe, and is definitely a big proponent of that. And I think, in terms of the folks that were on the panel, he was definitely one of the strong voices and advocates for trying to break down the barriers that make it harder to do business in Europe or from Europe, knowing that, the U.S. will probably be a part of the equation in some way, and in this case, through a partnership. So very interesting talking with him. To wrap things up at the conference, I ran into a very interesting character. His name is Nico Perez, and he actually does some correspondence work for Intruders.tv, which is a citizen journalism type company outfit based in the UK, but they do have someone here in the Silicon Valley as well. But he's actually part of a new startup called Mixcloud.com, and I'll let him describe that technology.
Finch.
This is Jennifer Lindsay at LeWeb speaking with Nico Perez of Intruders TV and especially Mixcloud.com. Welcome.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
So as a co-founder of Mixcloud, a new service that's UK-based, tell us about what it is.
So Mixcloud is a platform for on-demand radio shows, podcasts, and DJ mix sets. We're based on the insight that a lot of this sort of content is quite fragmented on the internet. We wanted to bring it together into one home, one distribution channel, where you could connect the listeners with the people creating the content. So it's kind of born out of our own frustration. We were radio show presenters and DJs, and we found that there was no real good place to host your content online. You could put it up into the iTunes podcast directory, but there wasn't really a social element around that, and it wasn't very personalized. You know, you had to still trawl through the directory, try and find something of interest to you, and we felt that that could be improved on. So we're trying to do three things. We're trying to make radio more social, more democratic, and more personal. Social in the sense that you can see what your friends are listening to, you can see what they're favoriting. More democratic in the sense that anybody can upload. You don't need a show on the BBC, although some of our users actually do. And more personal in the sense that because we know what you've listened to, we can make you recommendations about other things.
So in terms of, you know, the money question, I know you've just raised funds, so it's a very early company. But in the people that are contributing, is there a revenue model that they can take advantage of?
At the moment, the revenue model is based around advertising and premium accounts. In the long run, what we really hope to do is build the first sort of democratic radio platform whereby we could actually monetize enough to do a revenue share with the people creating the content. Because at that point, you know, you've reached a scale where a lot of these people who are doing it for the passion, for the pure love of it, enthusiasts, would be able to collect a certain amount of revenue from their passion, which we think it would be an amazing thing. But that's a goal that we're striving to achieve.
So it's down the road.
Yes.
So we both have seen as observers here at La Web, Goom has a big presence. So tell us how your service is different or similar to Goom.
So Goom's an interesting new platform as well. It's also looking at changing radio. I think the way we're different is that we're slightly more democratic, so anybody can upload, and the community decides what they want to listen to, what get played. And on the front page, you can go there and check it out. There's a popular list. And in a way, that's a little bit like Dig for radio. You can see what's getting most popular. And we're just about to launch a new feature that brings in a real-time element to that. So we monitor what people are saying about the shows on Twitter, and the more heat they get, the higher they rise up in the popularity chart.
So now, in terms of the way people can use the tool, do they have to be at a computer, or is there an iPhone app? Tell us about that.
That's a great question. At the moment, they have to be at a computer and they upload a single MP3. But going forward, there's a lot of companies doing really interesting things with iPhone apps. One of them is called Audio Boot out of the UK. There's another one that you just told me about called Cinch from Blog Talk Radio.
Yep.
And I think that in the future, we're going to try and integrate with them and see if we can be another channel for people to distribute their content through.
Now, you also have an interesting relationship in that you are a contributor to Intruders TV, which is sort of democratization of journalism through video online. And there's a relationship there with your company, Mixcloud.
Yeah, so on a personal level, I do some of the interviews for Intruders.tv, speaking with entrepreneurs in the tech scene. And on a company level, Mixcloud has just partnered with Intruders, and we're about to launch the music channel. So Intruders right now is tech-focused. They've got a lot of great interviews with some of the pretty good tech entrepreneurs, but they wanted to expand into different verticals. They're about to do a fashion one as well. But coming up very shortly, you're going to be able to check out Intruders.tv, the music channel, and that's in partnership with Mixcloud.
So how would that work? So does that mean that bands that haven't signed with labels can now do their own videos and host them on that channel, or is it a different kind? Is it for people that are observing music festivals?
It's a bit sort of it's a bit more journalist based. It's more editorially based, and the tagline for Intruders is inside innovation. So we try and get inside people who we believe are innovating, doing new things. So whether that be on a tech front, where people are coming up with new ideas, and new web apps, and new software, or in the music space, people are pushing the boundaries in terms of the music that they're producing or the type of live shows that they're putting on. that's what we're interested in.
So you asked me this question earlier about whether I consider myself a journalist or a podcaster. Where do you sit on that question in terms of your relationship at Intruders TV?
Tough question.
It's your own.
Drinking my own medicine, huh? I guess I'm somewhere in between, part journalist, part, you know.
What drives you to do it?
Intruders or Mixcloud?
Well, Mixcloud obviously is a business, so
yeah.
You're a co-founder there. Different relationship than being a contributor somewhere where you are on intruders.tv. So just as curious, you know, what drives you to contribute to intruders.tv?
I think with Intruders, it's just a great way to meet interesting people who are innovating and doing interesting things. And ultimately, from a personal standpoint, it's an opportunity to learn from other people and to try and get inside the way they think and the way they look at problems in the world and how to make things better.
So has it helped inform the business piece of making Mixcloud a reality?
I guess maybe not in a direct sense, but on a sort of intangible level, you start to appreciate how, you know, people may try different business models, and the first one may not succeed, but, you know, you can try another one. So I've just been speaking with a guy from Answers.com, Bob from Answers.com, and, you know, he was telling me how the first couple of business models they tried a subscription model, and that didn't really work. Now they've gone with contextual advertising. And so it's kind of reassuring to hear other people who have tried things, and it may not always work, but, you know, you just flip it and keep going and try something new.
Evolve or die, right?
Yeah.
So I gotta ask my last question for today. I've been asking this question. Where'd you get your Twitter photo?
My Twitter photo was actually taken when I was DJing in college.
Which was where?
I went to college at Cambridge University in England.
Yeah, I think we know Cambridge.
Yeah, that's the one. And it was taken about 4 or 5 years ago. But I just really like it. It's cool sort of panorama style shot.
Well, so we'll have to check out you at Twitter, which is at Nico Perez. And thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot, Jennifer. Appreciate it.
So that concludes our interviews from La Web. Can you believe everything that you've heard was actually recorded on an iPhone? It was pretty amazing. As I said, you know, the reception to the Cinch app on that's available on the iPhone, and, you know, of course, Apple making great products, you know, being able to take the phone and walk around and be able to get that level of quality interviewing out and then distribute it through Twitter and Facebook immediately was really great. So I was able to offer people a sense of immediacy and then come back and do this rap show for you to kind of bring it all together and give you a flavor for what La Web was like. I really thank you for going on this journey with me to La Web. I hope that it was an enjoyable experience, and I want to be able to bring a bigger and better program to you next year from the 2010 La Web Conference. So please send in feedback to this year's to me about this year's lineup of people that we were able to snag, what you thought of the technology, and certainly if you want to check out Cinch for yourself, again, a sister to Blog Talk Radio, you can check it out at cinchcast.com. And that wraps things up for this edition of The A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. It's our last program before the holidays. We are back on January 8th, 2009, with Dave Morgan, who's the CEO of Stimul Media. We have a pretty exciting lineup, actually, throughout the new year. I've been working hard to program up until I think we've got March booked. So please be listening for some exciting names. We have Seth Godin, Charlene Lee, Shel Israel, Joanna Earle from Current TV, just to name a few. Looking for bigger,
better, brighter names of people that we, you know, that are certainly influencing industries that we can look to learn from, and, you know, hopefully get a sense of you know, them as well as their journey so that it helps inform our own. Again, I can't do this show without you, so thanks for being an integral part of the show. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to friend us or make us a favorite here on Blog Talk Radio. And be sure to follow Jennifer, that's Jennifer with an ED on the end, on Twitter for the very latest. You know, if you follow this show often, you know I'm prone to adding programs, and that may very well happen as we've had to cancel a couple in the last couple of weeks doing some juggling to fit LeWeb in and my chest cold. So my apologies to anyone who was looking for someone in particular. I promise they will be rescheduled to the new year. Happy holidays, everyone, on that note, and have a wonderful new year.